Welcome to We Empower, the radio show that inspires you to embrace your potential, resilience, and strength. In these challenging times, we're here to help you unlock your power to overcome obstacles, pursue your dreams, and shape a brighter future. I'm Anna Martinez, your host for this empowering hour. Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of We Empower. I'm really thrilled to have you all with us today. So sit back, relax, and get ready to be inspired. Let's make today count. In today's episode, we will have two great guests here to introduce. It is first, Florin Batida. He's a Forbes 30 Under 30 Europe honoree, AI builder, civics innovator, and data strategist transforming technology into real-world social and business impact. Really well-known by being a speaker also on many conferences, just as TEDx. And then I'm happy to welcome here Ana Luisa Becerra, which I meet after UN conference in New York last time. You are a young champion of the Earth, biotech entrepreneur and CEO of SDV, creating solar-powered water solutions that transform lives worldwide. Very happy to welcome you here. But first, let's kick off things with a song selected by Florin.
Rearrange my mind.
Good morning and welcome here in the show, Florin. I'm so happy to have you here.
Good morning.
So I would like to introduce you with a few words. Florin Vetter proves that one person with data, courage, and determination can influence an entire country. After founding the anti-corruption movement Corruption Kills, he became one of Europe's most recognized civic innovators before reinventing himself as an AI entrepreneur and technology builder. Today, he explores the frontier where artificial intelligence, automation, and human creativity intersect. His journey reminds us that technology is most powerful when it serves people, not the other way around. So happy to have you here, Florin. We know each other from a few backgrounds we are sharing, not only where we come from, as Romania is also your home country. I would like to start with three questions we ask everybody, and so would like to ask you this also. First of all, we empower. What does we ask something which is about sustainability? What does sustainable empowerment mean to you personally, and how do you live sustainability to others, environment, through your work or life?
So what does sustainable living means for me in a way? It means to be try to be a net positive in the world. Try to not like there will be things that we will not do right, or we will kind of pollute on them, but then try to do the others that can help and offset kind of the footprint that you are doing, and not only the carbon footprint, but I don't know, the general footprint that we live in this world. And more concretely, ideally, don't look just on yourself and your house and where you are, and look also in your community and see what in your community could be changed, could be improved, and you could volunteer some of your time or resources to also help there. So you create an impact first of all locally on yourself, but then look in the community that you are and the things that you can do to help. And it can be physical, and also it could be digital.
I like that very much, and it's possible to feel when you're around with Florin that you have this positive power, and it's a positive power which is not just overwhelming. It is a positive power which gives room to other people to unfold their potential. This is, I think, also something which is important to say. What are the three health habits or kind of, let's say, life hacks that help you stay energized, balanced, and really truly well physically and mentally, while seeing so much things a lot of people don't see, being somebody who looks also behind the curtain as a person knowing what technology can do in the positive and negative way.
So three habits that keep like what keeps me energetic, and I think that's I wouldn't call it a life hack directly, but find the things that creates passion in you, that you do them with love. And for me, that's kind of my life story, is I start doing something and I do something because I care, and I sometimes do because I care, or sometimes I do because I'm really annoyed by it. Like, because there is something that exists, but it could be better, it's inefficient, or it can be improved. And then I'm like, okay, I will start trying to work with that organizations that already are doing it. And then if I observe that, okay, maybe it's not a good fit, or maybe it's not happening how I envision it, then I will usually start my own initiative or start my own community, or basically complain a little if needed. But if you see that it doesn't help that much, then see if maybe you can create a better version than just complaining and then quitting, like, this will never change. No, let's start it by ourselves. And for me, this is how I started doing a lot of things, and it keeps me energetic. Because when I start doing something that I care, I will do it with passion. And ideally, how it started for me, most of the different ventures that I started, at least when I was like 20, I was starting to do something as volunteering, and I would create this, and then somebody will be like, "Hey, actually, we have some budget and we want to pay you to do this for money." So I ended up a lot of the things that I worked to be the things that I would have done by for free, and then somebody were like, "Actually, we have a budget and we can pay you for this." So I think that's the best scenario, because you do things with love and you do things that you passionate, and you create basically your own role. You don't need to follow other people or the blueprints.
I completely understand you, and I'm completely the same, Florian. A lot of people ask me sometimes, why are you doing these things for free? Do you have enough money? And then I got confused in the past, as you said, and thought, okay, think about this vice versa. I'm doing these things because I love to do the things. I'm passionate about this. I want to move things. If I would wait until somebody gives me money for this, what would this be? This would be the, this is a, yeah, this doesn't fit. I mean, if you want to move things, you just move things, right?
Yeah, like money helps definitely, because
Yes.
we still need to live. But like for me, the ideal scenario is like I have like, for example, data mining, web scraping, AI now for deployed engineer,
Yeah.
and there will be people or companies that they will hire me. They will pay me good above world average sums, and then I have the time to do some of the other things that I'm doing as volunteer, as without expecting or wanting to be paid for that, because either the pay would be too low and it's not worth doing it for me personally at this moment of my life, or yeah, I don't know, depends.
Yeah, absolutely. Completely understand and completely with you. Can you share a life experience that shaped who you are today? A moment you will never forget, and why it changed you?
Oh, I would probably go for the more mental health version of me when I was a teenage, and also when I was a child and a teenager. Maybe because I self-diagnosed myself a little on the spectrum, or I didn't have that much social skills. And I was bullied when I was a child in school, and compared with I didn't feel that much support growing up from the people around me and the community that I was in. So I wanted to analyze myself around the age of, I don't know, 15, 17. I was kind of in depression. And the moment that kind of changed, it was, I think at one moment I kind of realized that it cannot go deeper, like you are basically rock bottom. And the beautiful thing is that if you find kind of something that is actually the lowest that you can go, even if, yeah, it can still get worse all the time. Then at least in my vision and how I kind of rewrite it, is that then things can only go up. Like, you can only keep updating and upgrading yourself. And for me, what helped was discovering volunteering. Like, it was me, this person without a purpose, without, like, oh, okay, life sucks, and then you die. And switching from that to more of like, I can do volunteering and I can help and I can impact the life of other people. And actually, I do something that I also care and it impacts myself and it changes me. And for me, I think that was kind of the first trigger, because there are a lot of other life experiences going on, but if I would have not had this kind of not awakening, because it wasn't an awakening, but yeah, discovering this beautiful community and these beautiful souls that were I was able to interact and to see that there is more to this world than just what I knew around my neighborhood and yeah, in places where people were not that, I wouldn't vibe with them. just to put it bluntly. I think, yeah, that defined me, and that kind of defined at least a decade of my work in volunteering. And then, of course, yeah, then I was like, okay, but in reality, we also need to earn money and stuff like that, because if not, life still sucks on some parts.
Thank you. You fought corruption before building AI. What connects those two missions?
So fighting it, I want to say fighting AI, no, not yet, but who knows? Fighting corruption and AI. It would go still on the idea of me trying, like, disliking inefficiency. I observe inefficiency in a system, in anywhere where I observe it. What I do is like, how can I improve it? How can I change it? And for the activism part, my first protest was 2006, I think, and then I was kind of inactive up to 2011. And it was the need of like, hey, there is something happening that seems unjust. Let's try to change it. And first, there was this Russia Montana movement that I started to go to the meetings and get involved. But I was observing that there was meeting with like 60, 70 people. We would meet for like 3 hours and a half. There would be basically a lot of discussions, but kind of random in a way, because it was a lot of about ideology, about different things. And at the end of the day, we spent 4 hours and almost no decision. So for me, it was like, okay, I want to get involved. I start getting involved, but then there is so much discussion happening that we don't do that much. So in 2015, when there was Collective, a night fire tragedy that killed 65 people, including a friend of mine, this is when I decided to start Corruption Kills. So we can focus specifically on corruption, not on other topics, and observe a problem, try to fix it directly without the 4 hours of discussions to if we should do that or do something else. No, let's be operational and be able to do things. And on the AI front, it helped. Like, it was also like, how can I, like, I'm obsessed with automatization and improvement of processes. Like, I like to create the processes behind and to have streamlined things like, okay, this is the input, this is the output, these are the different processes inside. And AI was, of course, really interesting from that side of like, first of all, I wanted to understand it, like, what's going on? It's this real, it is, are we still, it is actually a computer, it may be something else. So it was a lot of exploring, and after observing that I can basically do 5, 10, 20, 100x more things better than I was doing it before, so some of the cases, then I was like, okay, definitely I need to adopt this, because that would allow, this is a force multiplier.
I can really understand. So I have some, I think, very interesting questions left, which I need to ask you. But before first, we have a small break, and we see each other back in 2 minutes. So stay tuned. We see each other back in a few minutes.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Florin, we talked already about your initiative against corruption, and of course also everything what you shape in AI. What is the biggest misconception society has about AI today?
The biggest difference of perception between like what they think and what's going to be.
Exactly. I mean, I can give you a sample which might help a little bit. I mean, I see often that there are a lot of people around which are totally frightened against AI. So they say, "Ooh, I don't want to touch AI. AI is really crazy." Then there are other people which say, "Oh, AI is so great. AI can create my life. AI can decide for my life. I ask AI if I should meet this person for being my partner. I put the details of this person into AI, and AI tells me if this could be my my husband in future. I ask AI if I should go to the doctor. I ask AI about everything. AI is more than my digital twin. It is my brain. And if anything comes up new from AI, they say without checking, yes, we have to adapt this no matter what. They're not thinking about bias. They're not thinking about values, humanity, things like this.
There are more things to unpack. One of the risks that I see already, some of my friends kind of falling to it, on this is more on the darker side of AI, is AI psychosis. Like, you have people that consume and kind of believe everything that the AI is kind of telling them, and they kind of form this relationship almost where me and AI were taking over the world, or me and AI were kind of the same universe, and blah blah, whatever the psychosis will go. So that's kind of on the dangerous spectrum. Think of it, from my point of view, as a non-deterministic chatbot that is really, really good at solving tasks. Like, think of it as a tool that is, much smarter than most of the humans in the world, almost getting there. So it is something that is almost impossible to predict how it's going to evolve, but currently it's still a tool, and think of it as a tool. And from that perspective, learn what it can do and learn what it cannot do, and where it's good and where it's basically hallucinating. And I think the later you start using AI, it's going to be in a way more harder to understand the basic concept of it. As somebody that started using it a long time ago, they will kind of know the building blocks of it. They will know that, okay, there was the prompt and there was the question and answer, and you have a context window, and they will have all of this context that will help them more logically understand, compared to somebody that is just starting and everything is like agentic and everything is blah blah, and there are so many layers of abstractions that you don't even kind of understand at the root of it what does it does. And then it's more simple to personalize it, to fantasize it in ways that is not and probably should not be, in a way, like we still need the human factor of deciding and utilize it as a guide. Like, for example, I'm doing this Kessel event in October, and I'm using the AI to build like a suite of tools. I build around 130 tools using this concept of rootless computing. So you have basically the server. The server is the computer that you will access it, and then it can communicate peer to peer to other people. And I could have probably done this, but it would have taken me half a year to a year to build this, and also to build a suite of 134 tools, apps. So that would have taken even more years to build all of the demos for this. And with AI, I was able to build it in a few days, build a core of it at least, and then iterate on it. So it's a force multiplier, and it could be for good or for bad, depending of who is using it. Same as atomic weapons, or not atomic, but yeah, the atom in general. You can create energy or you can create bombs. So depending how you will utilize it.
Yeah, absolutely right. I mean, you have built systems processing billions of data points. And what surprised you most about human behavior hidden inside data?
I think it's interesting because having data scale allows you to see patterns that are not visible at the individual level. Like if you look at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, 20 people, you cannot get the same stats that you can get if you look at millions of people, or country level, city level informations. For example, at DomainScope, where I'm building the AI index of the internet domains, trying to index all of the internet domains in the world and extracting around 200 categories per each, like the category, the audience profile, what's the go-to-market strategy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It is LLM friendly and things. And also extracting like in what city and in what country is this specific domain resides. So then like if you look at individual domains, you don't do that much. And also this is done with AI. So like 90%, let's say they're kind of accurate, 10% I know they're garbage. They're hallucinated, it was the wrong context window, so it kind of wasn't able to properly produce. And that's okay. Like, yeah, I can accept 10% bad data, because then if you aggregate the data at a city level, like for example, there are almost 500,000 websites for London or San Francisco that I identified. And having the data aggregated at the level of city, country, or industry, even with some of the bad hallucinations, you can start seeing patterns, and you can compare. If I want to compare London with New York, I can see kind of where do they differ based on the internet domains that exist in one market compared to another. And you can compare also countries, you can compare different things, and you can observe, you can kind of observe the differences in humans. And talking also about data, Meta released this beautiful data set of Facebook users around the world, where you can look at the level of county or country, and you can click basically any of the, for example, let's say you click Bucharest, you click on Bucharest, and you see where are all of the other people that are connected with people that are in Bucharest. So we can kind of see the social fabrics of people all around the world. So this is a fascinating data set. I just copy it. It's like, I think the raw data is like 12 gigabytes or something, but it's also interactive. That's like, you can basically observe a lot of things with data, especially when you aggregate them. And it's called the social connectedness index, social minus connectedness, that, or Google, whatever, Google it. People will find it. And like for me, I'm a really big believer of like having the data, but also make it public, make it available for us in an aggregated form that is safe. Like here, you cannot see, I cannot see Annabelle's friends connections, and I cannot see Anna's friends connection. I see it as an aggregated at the city or country or thing, kind of the same that we are doing at domain scope. Like give the aggregated data, and if you have a government, request it. Like let's say modify the law and ask like telecom providers to be able to provide moving data, but not at the individual level, so I know this is work and this is where the person is going, but at least to have an aggregated view, so I can know, I know 10,000 mobiles are moving from this part to this part, so we need more highways created or more roads, like how we can utilize this kind of data, or we can know the speed of things that are moving, or like, yeah, access data as a government, take the data and then offer it for free, so then other businesses and other things can be created on top of it instead of having it in a silo.
Super interesting. Thank you so much. We are running a bit out of time, but I would like to ask you one short question for now. One short question for now. Looking toward 2035, what technological breakthrough do you believe will redefine civilization more than generative AI?
Oh, most probably the technology that will appear will be, I would expect it to be a progress of generative AI, of kind of the evolution of AI and what it is going to unlock when you are able to iterate so much faster, especially if you can iterate and then have also verification done automatically. Oh, I would expect something either on the chapter of power, something maybe fusion, but if not, something that could allow us to basically allow kind of to have unlimited energy, and that would scale a lot of things. Or on the longevity front, to unlock, to get closer to living with a great quality of life up to 150 or 120 at least. And that would be an interesting change, even if this will be one that needs to be carefully, like a lot of my friends in longevity. They're like, yeah, we have people and we never die. And for me, it's like, I think it's good that we die. And I think people as a generation is good because to make room for the new, you have to remove the old in a way. And this is true for the mentalities, for the kind of cultural baggage that each generation has. That and also for humans that are hoarding and dictators and leaders that they would stay at dictators for life, if not for old age. So it's possible that we will have some of this advancement, but they should be taken with precautions that is not good all the time because, yeah, like I know, we want to empower the youth, but then the older politicians never want to go out of power. So by the virtue of time, some of them will eventually retire. If not, if they could live 200, maybe they will want to be in power for 200 years with their older 1 century ago idea still persisting in some countries. So that's a double-edged sword.
I'm absolutely with you. Thank you so much for being here in the show, Florin. I have plenty of further questions I would like to ask you now. And if you like, we have a second talk. So you can, of course, see that we do it with the next one and talk about further question as the future has a lot of things for us awaiting. And you're there at the cutting edge point. So, looking forward to having you again. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much, Annabelle. Have a great day.
Thank you. And looking forward to seeing you soon again, Florin, wherever we meet at castles or at other
Hopefully,
events.
at the castle at Veld in October.
Exactly. Okay. Thank you so much. And now I would like to welcome Anna. Anna, welcome here to the show.
Thank you so much, Annabelle.
a great pleasure to be here.
I already introduced you very quickly in the beginning, so let me continue this and strengthen this a bit. At just 15 years old, Ana Luisa Becerra decided that access to clean drinking water should never depend on where someone is born. She transformed the conviction into Aqualuz, a solar power technology that now provides safe water to thousands of people in vulnerable communities already. Today, as a founder of SDW, she combines biotechnology, entrepreneurship, and innovation, and sustainability, of course, too, to tackle one of humanity's greatest challenges. Anna demonstrates that true innovation begins not with technology, but with empathy, with a big heart, and with a few steps you do instead of just talking. Welcome, Anna, here in the show.
Thank you so much, Annabelle.
So, Anna, same for you. The first three questions we ask about first, what does sustainable empowerment mean to you personally? And how do you love sustainability to others, environment through your work or life?
Oh, for me, I think that sustainable empower is something that is kind of reconnecting to the humanity, the environmental, and sometimes to have back something that we lost as a society. Talking about how in the first generations of humans, we had so much of a good connection with the environment, and now we don't. So I guess sustainability and sustainable empower is reconnect to the world.
Absolutely. And what are the three health habits or kind of life hacks that help you stay energized physically or mentally or both?
I like to as I in Brazil, I like to uses every opportunity that I have to be in the nature, to be around animals, like in a farm or in a beach, to enjoy the sun in Brazil that is very good. And as I have a daughter, 3 years old, to be with her definitely is my best way to reconnect to who I want to be and who I want her to see as an inspiration for whatever she wants to be in the future.
Thank you, Anna. That reminds me of me. Sometimes it's for me coming home, sitting next to my dog, just talking with him and getting answers like, gives me the understanding that the dogs or the animals understand more than we think often and are closer to us and gives me a really really good feeling and relaxing. And also with kids, I think kids open us the world again to our childhood and to also the child in us, which we often are not seeing enough and not giving enough room, right? So to learn from our child or from our children what it means to play your child, give your child enough room. I think this is perfect, if you can do this. Can you share a life experience that shaped you, who you are today? And I'm sure that you have many from that what you have built, a moment you will never forget.
Oh, definitely one that changed the path that I'm in right now. It was reading a book. A Brazilian book. The translations of the name is Dry Lives, but in Portuguese is Vidas Secas. It's a book that tells a story of a family that live in a context without water, without several crucial things to live. And it's a reality here in several communities in Brazil. So that book made me understand how come we are in 21st century. We have so much technology. We were hearing about fluorine, talking about AI, and still people don't have something so basic as water, as clean water, and are suffering because of that.
And that was basically what changed my path, what made me realize that I need to do something about it. And that's basically what I'm doing since I was 15 years old. It was when I read this book in 2013. So over 13 years have passed, and I'm still doing this. And
Wow.
there's still a lot to do.
Wow. Maybe you can share the name of the book with us later, and we see each other
Sure.
in a few minutes. So please stay tuned. We will continue after the small commercial break.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Yeah, Anna, I just talked about this great book which changed your life or gave your life a new direction. So I think many of our listeners are curious to hear what kind of book this is, and maybe they also want to read it, that this book can give them another direction. Would you like to share it with us now or later on?
Yes, definitely. I will send a link. I'm not sure if there is a version in English. Probably there is, because it's a classic book in Brazil. It's almost 100 years, and I'm very happy because I met the writer's grandson, because the writer, of course, is not alive anymore, but his great son is still continue his work. He's also a writer, and I was so happy to have the opportunity to tell how his grandpa changed my life after I read the book.
Great, thank you so much. It is interesting because you founded Aqualos so early, and you were so sure about that this topic is something which is relevant to us. Why do we believe access to clean water is becoming the defining challenge of the century?
Well, after 13 years working with water, I now understand so many things that when I was 15 years old, I didn't. And I have a clarity that water is behind a lot of issues. I'm talking about the human issues, poverty, health issues. So when I understood that working with water would be my life mission, I could see that I could have a direct impact in so many other aspects, and definitely saving lives. That I just keep doing. I keep with this journey of making other people understand the importance of water, the importance of understanding the problems that if you don't have water, you will have. And with the society growing so, we now are basically in a world crowded of people, and we still just have the same amount of water as the planet had as it began, the life began. it's so crucial for us to understand that if we don't take care of water, if we don't save water, if we don't invest in proper technology, we'll not be solving the issue for those who don't have access, but we will create more issues to millions, to billions of people that right now it's a good situation of having water, but maybe in the future we will have generations without this so important resource. Basically, we can't have life without water.
Absolutely. And even if you think how much percentage of water is inside our bodies, then we understand or the kind of water is around us, no? In other, I mean, air, rain, snow. We have so much, we are surrounded by that, right? It's an element, it's a really important element of our life. So Anna, if you had unlimited funding tomorrow, so you have one wish free, unlimited funding, what global water challenge would you solve first?
As I'm more connected to the issue of people that doesn't have clean water, definitely I would solve that. Especially in the countries that this is a very big issue, not only here in Latin America, but we know that Africa, in Africa we have several countries with a very big problem of water. So I would invest in sustainable technologies to solve this, and I will definitely see the results in so many other aspects, like in the health of the people, education. When you understand the connections of water, you see that talking about the SDGs, the Sustainable Development Goals, the water has a direct impact in all of them.
Anna, you just talked about vulnerable communities. You just talked about Africa. What leadership lessons have you learned from working directly with vulnerable communities?
I learned that we sometimes think that they don't understand, that they don't have education, but they do have. And sometimes, if we take consideration, they are the most connected to the nature than we are. And with that, there is so many lessons, there is so many knowledge, so many inspirational life journeys that we met, and we understand that those communities, they of course has a lot of issues, but they as well can teach us how we could live proper in the world, how we could be more sustainable. I met families that knows how to use water in just the right amount to be agriculture. I've learned of course other bad experience as well of mothers that can work because every 2 weeks the kids are sick because of unsafe water consumption. She needs to take them to the hospital. Sometimes the hospital doesn't have the correct medicine to help them. So they knows how to enjoy life and how important is life for them, because there is so many things that they have problem that they keep trying to remain safe, remain healthy. That's the most important thing for them.
Absolutely. Anna, I mean, I'm sometimes not understanding that. We have so many big leaders in the world which are not taking care of water, of clean water, of sustainability. And if you look into their personal life, you see that often we are talking about fathers, we are talking about mothers, we are talking about people with children, with grandchildren. How can this be? And how do you convince investors that impact and profitability can strengthen each other? And it's time to not just look for short profit. It's time to not just look for the next fancy stuff, hot stuff. It is time to really look at something which is not only sustainable, but also regenerative for our next generation.
Well, this is a trick question because we try a lot to convince investors and people, but sometimes it's not very possible. Sometimes we still need to work with their mind that this is marketing, it's not really something that they care about. But we do have some important KPIs. We have some metrics that shows that if we invest correctly in water, we can save a lot of money. Right now, we are working with SROI, social return of investment. That in our calculation, our average is for every dollar invested in our water technologies, water projects, we can save up to $27 in terms of health, education, and directly money saved from the communities, but as it's not really touchable for the investor, it's not saving for their pockets directly. It's more about the society in general. They don't really care about it. But you see that it's a very important data because especially for the government, it tells them if they invest proper in water, they could save a lot of health and education, and could be reapplying in other projects, other problem-solving technologies. Well, it's still a very big challenge for us to try to make people look for the data and understand what the data tells them.
Absolutely. And I mean, you're describing a lot of challenges. You are seeing farther than other people. You know what could be the worst. You know what could be the best. But what has been your most difficult moment as a founder, and what did it teach you?
Well, I guess there is a lot of times, it's several times that we keep seeing that we still need money from people that doesn't suffer from this issue. And this is a problem because sometimes they are willing to do it, sometimes they are not, and we still need to impact thousands of people. Millions of people. How we are going to do it if we don't secure a proper way to find investors, money, and people that are willing to do the impact because they know how important it is. So this is a question that I still have. I haven't had the answer so far. Sometimes I think keep thinking that I need the technology for the people who can pay for it. But I don't have much time to thinking about more technology with a current business being operational. And so I just think, wow, maybe if I go back to when I was 15 years old, I should concentrate my time in having a technology that could solve for both publics. And so I would have money from the people who can pay to deliver technology for people who can't. But well, maybe I can find a proper way in the future. Maybe anyone who are listening to us right now can find me and tells me what they think about some answers of how could I have an impact worldwide, exponential impact without keeping struggling to find investors.
Thank you, Anna. So this is a call to our listeners. Yes, if you have any ideas for Anna or you are interested, of course, to help the water stays available for everybody in the world and is not that element where we are fighting for or where investors are trying to get their profit from, yes, then reach out to Anna. So Anna, we don't have that much time left, but we have time for a question which I would like to address to you. Imagine every world leader were listening today, hopefully. So what single decision should they make within the next 12 months to secure a sustainable future for coming generation?
I guess that they should look for the small entrepreneurs, the people who are locally trying to solve problems. Because sometimes if we just consider it our time in the big companies, in the people that are already doing some traditional technologies, we won't find the answers that we need. I know that is hard sometimes if we are considering a lot of young entrepreneurs, a lot of small business. But if we do have a connection with them, we can learn a lot. And innovation is always the answer to solve problems.
And I like that. But give me one question to that. I mean, sometimes NGOs are wanting to reach something. And
yes. Yes.
But they miss the knowledge completely. And I remember,
yes,
for example, the Brazilian rainforest, where part of this went away by COP to enabling the COP could take place there. And NGOs were saying, okay, don't be sad about that, because we are putting again some plants there, but they're putting the monoculture eucalyptus, where everybody, like you, Anna, might know that eucalyptus monocultures are not a substitute, a really adequate substitute to a rainforest, if we want to get back this great biosphere.
Yeah.
Is this some, where do we get the knowledge from? Just a quick answer, please.
Yeah, I will go back to the vulnerable communities, and in this case, indigenous people, always people that are really connected to the nature. They have the answers to a lot of problems that we currently are facing. And if we can use nature-based solutions to solve them, as Aqualuse is one of these technologies, is a nature-based solution, we can definitely see some progress. Just try to be connected to the universities, to the NGOs, to the communities, to the startups. Then we will have a proper climate and we will have a proper future for our kids.
Thank you so much, Anna. I think this is a good last word for now. Hope to see you very soon. I hope that I can connect you also to further people as Annegret. And that wraps up our episode of We Empower, the weekly radio show dedicated to celebrating the strengths, resilience, and limitless potential of us, of human and humanity around the world. Join us again next week as we continue on this empowering journey, sharing real stories of triumph, upliftment, and empowerment. Your presence and engagement mean the world to us, and we appreciate you taking the time to tune in. Remember, this time is a gift for you to discover new inspiration, embrace insights, and find the motivation to live life to the fullest. Don't hesitate to get involved. Your voice is valued, and together we can make a difference. Thank you for being part of our community, and until next time, keep shining and empowering others. Together we rise. Thank you.
Slow down.